Today on Sexton's Show, we look at the number one ugliest divorce in the history, potentially, of actor divorces. We talk about an absolutely terrifying statistic when it comes to Gen Z and some of their behavior in the bedroom. We talk a little bit about some celebrity breakups that are out there, and we get to hear me go, "Gia, Gia," out of context. So stick around. It's going to be an absolute blast. It's a packed docket. But remember, before we begin, like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. It really does help the channel, which is growing every single day, thanks to viewers just like you. We got a full docket today, so let's get after it.
All right, Jim, it seems like Angelina Jolie is back on the market. Or back out there dating. She's been back on the market, but there are dating rumors that she is with a co-star of hers, a Frenchman, Luis Garrel.
Oh, Frenchman of all things.
And, you know, she's come out and said, "I'm not dating. We were just having dinner." Yada, yada. Dinner. We know that game. But, you know, this is a woman who I think she's been very private, went through the high profile marriage, you know, was involved with kind of stealing Brad Pitt away from Jennifer Aniston, and then had her own problems with him. So a lot of tumultuous.
You skipped over the "had her own problems with him." What about had possibly the longest running, ugliest, and most public custody dispute in the history of the state of California? I think that actually might be a better way to put it.
Okay.
They had the most unbelievably public implosion divorce that you could imagine. I mean, I did a couple of segments for Access Hollywood on Hollywood's messiest divorces, and they were number one every f***ing time.
Really? So you would say this is the number one Hollywood divorce ever?
They had a brutal, brutal divorce. It went to the appeals. I mean, they went to the mattress. I mean, it was a rough one. The fact that either of those two people would ever date again, God bless them, because if anything would turn me off of heterosexuality, it would be that fucking marriage like that. And the implosion. I think the divorce was actually much longer than the marriage. So
who is to blame there?
It depends on who you ask. I mean, both of them really made a compelling case that it was the other, and I was not involved in the case except to comment on it publicly for Access Hollywood and a few other outlets. What I will tell you is, from having reviewed the court filings that were leaked or made public, they both told very different stories, and not surprisingly, each of them was the hero of the story, according to them, and the other was the villain. But in a way that these are not stories that could ever exist factually in the same universe. Like, there had to be a multiverse if both of these were true, because they're completely different people depending on who was telling the story.
I've always thought that Brad Pitt kind of skated on reputation-wise. Like, that story about them on the plane where he got physical, like, that seemed pretty disastrous, and people still
kind of... Yeah, it was disastrous from a PR perspective. The only thing I would say about that is the following. Anyone who is a parent will tell you, if you look at your worst moment as a parent, and you judge your parenting by that moment, you're a villainously bad parent. Like, all of us is at a moment where we just lost it. Like, we just lost it. We yelled, we said something we shouldn't have. Maybe we smacked the kid or hit them or something, you know, in a way that, again, not physical abuse, but like, you just lose it. You know, you're human and you lose it. You know, when we talked about motherhood and it being a difficult job, like, I think one of the side effects of that is that, there's moments where you just can't keep it together. There's moments where you might break down. If you judge a person by their weakest moment as a parent, you're not giving them enough credit. If you judge them by their greatest moment as a parent, you're giving them too much credit. We're kind of the aggregate. We're kind of the average of all of those things. I think Brad Pitt, that story, even if you hear it in the most unfavorable, unflattering version, and again, like, I don't know which is true or which is false. He had a different version of that story than she did. But even if you credit it as true, okay, it's an isolated, awful incident where someone who was having difficulty in their life and in their marriage, and he acknowledges that at the time he was having some substance use stuff going on.
How do you draw the line on stepping on the rake, though? Like, in this case, if, like you said, if it's all to believe to be true, he's drunk on a plane and he chokes one of his kids and smacks another in the face.
Is that
something you...
Yeah, look,
that's not a deal breaker?
The law does that all the time. Like, the law differentiates between appropriate corporal punishment and inappropriate corporal punishment. Like, we all know. Like, that is exposing a child to a risk of serious harm, physical harm and psychological harm. That's unacceptable behavior if it's true, right? So you do have to deal with that. But again, the question of, is this person now beyond redemption? Let's assume that he had a substance use issue, that he was intoxicated, he wasn't thinking clearly, and he engaged in this awful behavior. Now, again, was he actually obstructing this child's breathing, or was he like grabbing on the child like he was gonna, you know, choke them, or that, like you really, the devil's in the details of that interaction. And again, any interaction that happens when someone's intoxicated, voluntary intoxication is not a defense. Any lawyer will tell you that. But I do think it's a mitigating factor in terms of if this person realizes, oh my God, what mm-hmm. I did was absolutely horrible. It was the wake up call that I needed to recognize that I had a substance use issue and I needed to address it right away. And I needed to make some changes in my life. Again, sometimes that can be a blessing, that kind of a horrible incident. I think you have to make judgment calls all the time about when you're a parent, what is a line that's been crossed. But I think it's a little too easy when you dislike your co-parent to set that line in a place that you wouldn't. Again, where would you like it set for you? That's always a great, like, how would you treat other people? How would you want people to treat you? I think that that is often a very good gauge of this. How much grace would you like your co-parent to give to you? And how much do you think, if you're thinking for your children, which is a lot of what we're supposed to do, is we're supposed to think for our children. We're supposed to think, hey, what's going to serve this child's development the most? Because again, you're not parenting the child, you're parenting the adult you want them to be someday. You know, don't prepare the road for the child. Prepare the child for the road. Like, prepare the child, give the child a toolkit that they're going to be able to take into life and to use to overcome obstacles on their own. Like, solving all your child's problems for them is not a solution on how to build a competent adult. Like, showing your child how to engage in problem solving, that is useful. How to identify problems and then how to set about trying to solve them. Those are really useful skills. So I think we all know in our gut, like, hey, what would I hold myself to the standard I'm holding this person to? And if the answer is yes, then I think you move forward with confidence.
Moving on to another A-list celebrity, Jennifer Lopez, the queen of marriage and divorce. She was speaking out in an interview with People about, after splitting up with Mark Anthony, her third divorce, she was ready to give up on it all. And that's when someone in her camp said to her, "You're a dancer, right, Jennifer? When you're dancing a dance and you get the steps wrong, what do? I just keep going until I get the steps right." That's right, Jennifer. Always keep dancing. Is this good logic to apply to someone who's on their fourth, fifth, seventh, tenth divorce?
I mean, I certainly think it's compassionate advice to give to someone. I think it would be okay to say to this person, hey, what is the problem to which marriage is a solution for you? Because you're not good at it. Like, you're just not good at marriage. Either you're not good at being married, or you're not good at picking people to marry. So either it's your fault because you're not good at marriage, or it's your fault for who you're selecting, or some combination of the two. Like, maybe you have a bad eye for potential partners, and there are some habits that make you not particularly adept at marriage. But you can't be divorced that many times and then say, well, I'm as good at marriage as anybody. I don't think that's true. I think that one can infer motivation from results. And I think, you know, the desire to be a good spouse and the desire to be good at picking potential spouses and actually having the capacity to do those two things are two different things. Like, I might want to be a good dancer. I'm not a good dancer. Could I work really hard at learning to be a good dancer? Probably. It's not actually something I'm going to put my energies towards. So I guess the question is do you want to be good at being married to people? I don't know that you need to develop that skill. Like, you may just, you know, like, because people sort of look at it like, well, you have to get married or you're going to be alone for the rest of your life. I don't think that's an accurate layout of the menu. That's like saying you have to order this or you're going to starve. No, there's lots of options out there. There are people that cohabitate. There are people that just have relationships that are more transactional in nature. Or there are people that have situationships intentionally and say, hey, I'm someone who works constantly and I just want someone who every now and then when I have some free time. Like, Jennifer Lopez is a busy human being. She's surrounded by lots and lots of people. She has a full staff, like any number of very high achieving celebrities do. So she's not alone. And the question is what is it she's really looking for? Like, you know, what part of you is marriage serving? And is there a way to approximate what those benefits of marriage are for you without actually having to sign on for the contract of marriage? Or, by the way, keep getting married. Just have prenups every time, because I think the divorce rate for third marriages, fourth marriages, fifth marriages, every single subsequent marriage the likelihood of divorce goes way, way up, like by an order of magnitude. So, you know, again, the difference between first marriages and second marriages, it's a fairly small distinction. It's an increase that you divorce more often if it's a second marriage. But third, fourth, fifth, sixth, it gets much, much higher. So I think at this point, she's demonstrated that she's either not good at picking potential partners or B, not good at being married or some combination of the two. And it would be okay for her to just say, hey, you know what? Maybe this isn't the type of relationship that works for me. Let's see what other permutation relationship might be better. All right, gang, I'm going to share something with you about a sexting secret. And this is one of my secret weapons. One of my secret weapons, first time I've been, it's just us talking, so I can say this to you. Products by Soul, out of office gummies. I have to tell you, out of office THC and CBD gummies, I have been using these for years. I have been a subscriber for years. We actually approached them and said, hey, can we advertise your products? And I was thrilled when the team at Soul, a family business, said, yeah, get involved, Sexton Show. So we're here with you now with an offer code we're going to tell you about in a second. Sexton, 30% off on your first order of out of office. And I'm telling you, once you try these, you're going to try them again and again and be a subscriber just like I've been for years. Out of office THC CBD gummies let you control your experience. They have the singles. These are great for me on a Saturday afternoon after it's been a long week and I just want to chill. 1.5 milligrams of THC, 15 milligrams of CBD. When I have a trial the next day and I need a good night's sleep and I want something that's really going to bring me down, I go with the doubles myself. These are 3 milligrams of THC, 30 milligrams of CBD. Sometimes I'll take two of these if I really need to get some good sleep. When I say to you, what's great about out of office is you can control your experience. They give you the tools to do that. You start low, you start slow, and you figure out exactly what it is. And I have to tell you, after years of using these, I know exactly which experience I want and exactly what the recipe is for me to get it. So check out Out of Office Gummies. I really think you're going to love these. I know I absolutely do. Use offer code Sexton at the link below for 30% off of your first order.
Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott announced that he is splitting up from his fiance after a blow-up fight at their joint bachelor and bachelorette parties.
Who, by the way, when does this become a thing?
Thank you. That's what I really want to talk about.
Joint bachelor and bachelorette. Ugh. What the f*** is that?
One of my biggest
pet
peeves.
That is a new thing. Yes. That is not a thing that used to exist.
And I don't mind, like, you know, maybe there's one day you guys, like, meet up at the end or something. You're in the same city. I don't know. You can maybe work together. But
how many parties do we have to have, by the way, guys? We got an engagement party. Then we got a bridal shower. Then we got a bachelorette party and a bachelor party. Then we got a rehearsal dinner. Then we got the wedding. Then we got a brunch. Then how many fucking parties? How much attention do we need, guys? Yeah. Like, how much attention do we need here? Like, bachelor party, bachelorette party, I'm all for it. Go for it. It's totally performative because it's not like it's like, oh, I'm going to have sex for the first time soon. Like, right. It's ridiculous. And by the way, like any, especially if you're inviting like your future brother-in-law and your future father-in-law, like the last thing you should be doing is being at a strip club with your future father-in-law or your future brother-in-law and be like, hey, watch what a piece of shit I can be. Like, that's insane. It's insane. Fully insane. But the only thing more insane is having a joint bachelor and bachelorette party. Why would you do that? Like, why not? That's just another party then. That's just an engagement. That's like a pre-wedding party. Which, I mean, by the way, have a pre-wedding party, I guess, if you want to. But I thought the fucking wedding was the party.
I'll tell you why it happens. Because the female in the relationship asks for one.
Asks for?
A joint bachelorette.
A joint bachelorette.
I mean, I don't think that's ever been a guy's decision to do that.
I mean, I have
right?
to tell
I mean,
you,
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm generalizing,
I was a server for many years before I was a lawyer. I worked in different restaurants. And you dread more than anything a bachelorette party.
Yep.
Like, because they are just looking to have fun and misbehave, but in the most attention-seeking, like, I can't even, like, this is the bride. And you're just, oh my God, just fucking... Just stop. Just calm down. You're about to have an event where you're the center of attention. That's the whole point of the wedding, is you're going to be the center of attention. Do you have to have another one on top of the bridal shower, which was also you being the center of attention? Like, how gassed up on attention do you have to be? And the bachelor, bachelorette party, look, it was meant to be sort of a transgressive thing, right? That's why for men it ends up in a strip club or whatever. Mm-hmm. For women, it's that, like, you know, whatever, Hunkarama. I had a friend who danced at, I think the club was called Hunkarama. A lot of my gay male friends, by the way, dance at these places, because like a lot of these dudes are not heterosexual. Mm-hmm. Like they are just, you know, they're super good looking, but they're not. And they're also on like so much, you know, so much gear. It's not mm-hmm. even funny. But look, the Thunder from Down Under, all those kinds of like, you know, Chippendales, all that stuff. I get it, but I've always felt like it was sort of a reaction to, and it's a different vibe. Like that's a different vibe than a strip club, you know? Yeah. So it's a very different, you know, party atmosphere in a different way. I have not been to a strip club in many, many years because there's a phase of a man's life where you end up going to bachelor parties, and that's why you end up in a strip club a bunch of times, is because you're at a bachelor party. Unless you're the type of person who I guess just enjoys going there in your free time, which again, no shade if somebody, you know, enjoys that and they have the funds to do it. But what I would say is that this joint concept just seems very weird to me, because what's the purpose? Like the purpose of it was you're going to misbehave in a way that you won't tomorrow because you're getting married. The idea was it was originally bachelor party was the night before the wedding. Like this is your last night as a bachelor, not you're only going to be a bachelor for another 2 weeks. Like mm-hmm. what does that even mean? And by the way, a lot of people now cohabitate beforehand. So that doesn't even make sense. Like you're going to go home to this person. So I don't really get the joint thing. This is, I'm going to what? Cut loose in front of my partner? Like that's okay. I mean, that's great that you should be able to do that. That should be part of your marriage, is for the two of you to learn how to have fun together and misbehave together. But the idea that you're going to do a joint bachelorette party does not make sense to me. I think what you're saying about it being a reaction of like, well, let's all go to Vegas and then we'll split up for a few hours mm-hmm. and meet back up after. It's like, let me check in on you.
Yes.
Which again, if someone needs that level of babysitting, maybe don't fucking marry them. You know, that might be an even better way to solve that problem.
Did you have a bachelor party?
I did.
What did you do?
I was 22 years old, though. So
you were a pop.
We went to a steakhouse and then we went to Scores.
Good old traditional.
Which at the time was, yeah. And I only vaguely remember being at Scores. By the time we got there, we were all pretty well drunk.
Sounds like a good night.
My dad was there. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of like responsible adults there.
Right.
And I was 22 at the time. So there was just this sense of like, yeah, you know, like we're going to go and miss. It was very traditional. I mean, I was 22 years old. I had college friends, guys I'd just gotten out of college with. And we smoked cigars, ate steak.
Yeah.
It was very traditional. We went to a strip club. We went to Scores, which was like the cool, you know, place to be at that time. But it wasn't like, I didn't do any of those weird things where they like pull you up on stage and do weird. Like it wasn't, people knew I wasn't into that. And I don't know. It just was, even at 22, that wasn't my flavor. And and she had a bachelorette party. I think they went to Lucky Chang's, I think. Yeah, they went to Lucky Chang's, which was kind of, I thought, funny because it's like waiters in drag, you know. But they had a good time. They went out and got drunk. You know, I think that was what we did. We all just went out and got drunk.
I think a traditional bachelor party is kind of the way
sure.
to go. Another trend in recent years, along with the joint, is like we're just going to play golf or like go
sure.
hiking or something, which is fine.
Sure.
I remember Tony Romo, the quarterback, famously said he played hide and seek with his friends on his bachelor party. And I was like, listen, I'm not a strip club drug guy. But like, let's have a little bit of bachelor party fun at the bachelor party.
The idea was also to do like a very traditionally masculine kind of thing. So if it was like smoking cigars and eating steak and drinking scotch and getting hammered or whatever, like that's a more traditional bachelor party. I think that, you know, you throw the strippers into the mix if somebody's looking for it to be a little more illicit. When my son, got married, you know, I was interested to see, like, does this generation do that?
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up going out to Carbone. I got them I helped them get a table at Carbone. And then they went out to, like, the Macanudo Club and had cigars. And then I don't know if they did anything other than that. I'd be surprised if they did. I think that they, you know, drank and had a good time. I didn't go. And I made a conscious choice not to go because I said, listen, you don't want your dad at your bachelor party. Like, I'm glad my son and I are friends. I'm friends with both of my sons and I enjoy their company, but there's certain things you don't want your kid, you don't want to be there. Like my kids don't want to think about my sex life. I don't want to think about theirs. Like they don't want to think about me in a strip club. I don't want to think about them in a strip club, but I don't think that it was something that this generation was deeply ingrained on. And so, you know, I don't know. I think those norms change, but the idea of a joint party like that, then you're just having a party. Like you're just going out with your fiance and her friends and your friends, which is fine, but just call it what it is, which is we're all going to go hang out and have a good time before we have the wedding, which is us all hanging out and having a good time.
Moving on to Ryan Lochte, the Olympic swimmer. He was engaged for.
I remember that reality show.
Yeah.
You guys ever watch that reality show?
Because he is like brain dead.
Yeah.
He's one of the dumbest bimbos of all time.
Is he the one that would do the Gia Gia? No, is that? Yeah, that was Ryan Lochte.
Yes,
Gia,
it was.
Gia Gia Gia.
Dude, he got caught in that lie down in Brazil.
In Brazil,
for the
where they like said that they got it mugged and they didn't. They vandalized the bathroom.
The original Jesse Smollett, really.
I remember that. Gia Gia.
Gia was the worst. That's a good memory.
Worst.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Gia. So he
was being Ryan Lochte. Was that the name of the show?
Something like that. Yeah. Which is like, I mean, I know everyone gets a reality show, but that was a quick trigger to give that guy his own TV
show. But I remember I watched it. Like that was early reality TV. Like I watched all of the first season of Rock of Love.
Oh.
Like that was as good as it gets. Oh, that's like peak reality.
Yeah,
you know? It's like the first season of Temptation Island. Like that was some good shit. First seasons of Bridezillas. Oh, it's not better than that.
Well, so his girlfriend, I guess they're not married, but she has a podcast, and her podcast host came out and alleged that he was cheating on her. We could play that clip really quick.
Technically, on the still husband already is living with his girlfriend. They seem to be very happy.
I hope they are happy.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah.
No, they seem to. They've been happy for a really long time.
Very long.
Your husband's been really happy with his girlfriend
for many years. Yeah.
Obviously alleging that there was some overlap. And then his new girlfriend and Ryan Lochte released DMs that prove, at least they say so, that he did not cheat and there wasn't overlap. So I guess my question is, you know, it's never a good idea to air out your dirty laundry, right?
No.
But if one party does it like she did, do you have the right, or is it a wise move to, if you have proof, to engage back, or should you take the high road?
I generally think just don't comment. Like, I'm a fan of if you don't talk, you walk. I'm a fan of not. Look, if you're explaining yourself, you're already losing to some degree. And I don't explain. Like, your friends don't need it. Your enemies won't believe it. It's not really going to accomplish much of anything. You won't get paid for it either. Like, it's just not worth it. The people that want to believe you, the people that don't won't, you know, unless there's like entertainment value in it. Like when I clap back at somebody on the internet, it's really that it's for entertainment value. It's not that I actually think this person is going to go, you're right, you've made some very solid points and I'm going to change my perspective now. Most people won't do that. And most people that have decided they don't like you have decided they don't like you, and they're going to find something to support that theory in anything that you say. So I think in this situation, I mean, I find that clip very distasteful in the sense that it's like, that's great, I'm really happy for them. You're not.
Mm-hmm.
You're not in any way happy for them. Like, what you're really saying is, I hate this person. I think they're awful. I think they have kids together, by the way.
Yeah,
so, like, that's an awful situation.
And a lot of the DMs was from the other girl saying, hey, you got to worry about your kids. You're married.
Yeah. And look, you know, how people engage themselves in unhappy relationship, I think, is something that we all, if we're being honest, have had some experience with, which is, if people, as soon as they were unhappy in a relationship, ended the relationship, I would say, okay, maybe that would, infidelity would not be as common. But the truth is what you have there is probably people that were in a relationship that was no longer functional, but they were staying together either for appearances or for the kids or for some misplaced sense of loyalty or whatever it might be, thinking that they could keep it together. And of course, you know, one or both of them probably establish some new connections, which happens quite often. And that becomes a motivating factor for people to end the relationship. It also becomes a convenient excuse for people to blame everything on. I mean, really, the answer she's trying to get you to in that clip is, oh, you see, it's his fault. It's his fault that the marriage was great. And then he ran off with some other woman. Okay. Or he was unhappy in the relationship. Maybe you guys had an unhappy relationship. You're a bad couple. You're not well suited for each other. You were dissatisfying for each other. And he found some connection outside of that marriage. Maybe she found connection as well outside of the marriage. You never really know what's going on. Like, I will tell you, having been through facilitating the demise of thousands of marriages at this point, even the two people in the relationship very often have no idea what really happened in the postmortem. So I think it's super easy and tempting to go, oh, he was talking to another woman. It must be his fault. Okay, but you don't know anything about their relationship. How long were they together and not sleeping together? How long were they, you know, and because he made a connection to another person, that there was some interest between them, does that necessarily mean that there was something untoward happening? Maybe they just sort of established some interest in each other and then said, okay, we got to not pursue this until things are a little further along in the demise of my marriage. But I will tell you, I do have a lot of people that, you know, they're not technically divorced, but they've been separated from their partner for months, if not years, or living in the same house, but sleeping in separate rooms. Like, you know, marriages are not necessarily an indicator of the fact that two people are happy and together mm-hmm. and still, you know, functionally in a real marriage. It could be that they just haven't gotten around to the cleanup of this yet. They haven't pronounced the death of the marriage yet, and they're just pretending it's still on life support.
Before we get to our sexism and wrap up, just want to hit you with a new Gen Z stat.
Oh, boy.
100,000 Gen Z university students in America were surveyed. 1 in 3 Gen Z students admitted to scrolling their phone while having sex.
While having sex?
While engaged in coitus. Just
okay,
on the phone scrolling.
I gotta break
scrolling.
This down here. Hold on. Wait a second. One, why do you have your phone?
Well, you're probably filming yourself, to be honest.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking you're like, you know what? I'm going to want to see this later. Okay. Mm-hmm. How unsatisfying does that sex have to be if while you're having sex that you feel is worth filming or taking photos of, that you then go, I'm losing interest in this, and start scrolling on something else? That has got to be some really, really bad sex. Now, that's number one. Number two, I mean, how do you, are they both on their phones? Like, what's going on there? Like, I don't, is it for inspiration? Are you monitoring your cardio?
You know, like, so what do
yeah,
I do
is
next?
It like, yeah, is it let me see if my Apple Watch is picking this up, is saying that I'm jogging?
I got my steps in, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's ring. A great compliment. Your Apple Watch thinks you're exercising. Like, you're having sex and your Apple Watch goes, and by the way, it seems like you're exercising. You're like, yeah,
yeah,
it fucking
you
does.
Got that right.
You bet it does, you know? Like, yeah.
I'd have to imagine this is probably, I would think more likely a female would be scrolling. Like, you're not getting the job done. If I had to stereotype this, I would imagine.
I mean, you're
a
telling
girl
on yourself. That's all I'm going to say. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
I,
listen.
That seems very foreign to me. I don't know that I've ever.
Oh, okay, Mr. Coxman.
I don't
Coxman,
know that I've ever
I'm
seen
sorry.
A woman sort of being like, you know, like this or whatever. I don't know what position you're in, maybe at that
well,
point.
Well, I'll tell you what. I definitely haven't heard of a guy who was so disinterested in banging a girl that he's on his phone
but
at the same time.
He's on his phone. Although it does remind me of that Seinfeld episode about where George wants to eat during sex.
Yes.
You know, he wants the trifecta.
Yeah, so maybe that's the new version. People are just trying to take the things they love the most. Sex and their doom scrolling and put it together.
And put it together. I mean, yeah. I liked your theory about like, you know, what do I do next? You know, like what, like yeah. The guy's got like Claude or ChatGPT. Yeah. Where is the clitoris? You know, and he's trying to like compare it to this one looks different than the one on the screen. Hang on, there's a tutorial video. I have a headphone in here. Hold on 1 second. That's when you really are glad you paid for YouTube Premium. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Because if you're like, I'm going to find the clitoris, I just need a second. There's an ad. There's a, ask your doctor if Relexa is right for you. You know, and you're like, God damn it. Come on. I need to find the clitoris. You know? Yeah. I don't really know. I have to tell you, that is a frightening statistic. Mm. I've heard some frightening statistics. That is a frightening statistic. I mean, even in the most established relationship, I feel like if you were like, listen, do you mind if we can, you know, I don't want to miss what's on TV right now. I feel like that's asking a lot.
If you can't put your phone down for the 3.5 minutes that it's going to take.
Yeah, if
you
include
you got a real
snuggling.
Problem.
Yeah, 3.5, 4 minutes. Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's intense. You might need to think about phone addiction at that point. You're engaging in a compulsive behavior at that point. Now it's time for a sextonism. For those of you that are unanointed or new to the channel, these are things that I say so frequently that my staff wants to write them down and have them put into a book, because I tend to encounter people who are going through similar situations, and therefore I give them similar axioms, wisdom, some of which I've made up, some of which I've heard elsewhere, some of which are shuffled together from different pieces. But that's what sextonisms are. Today's sextonism is fear and faith both require you to believe in something you can't see. Fear and faith both require you to believe in something you can't see. Clients come in all the time and they're really in a place of fear. They're absolutely frightened. They're thinking about this imagined future and what their life's going to look like post-divorce. And one of the things I really try to do early on, and this is true for anybody going through a breakup or really going through anything, is that what you're doing now is living in your imagination. The future is an imagination. It's a projection. It's something you're thinking about, you're hypothesizing about based on present circumstances. It is just as easy to be optimistic as it is to be pessimistic when it comes to imagining things. You know, fear and faith are both rooted in imagining the future. One is an imagined disaster future. The other is an imagined future that has more beauty, more pleasure, more good things in it. So again, if you're going to believe in something, if you're going to believe in something you haven't seen yet and that hasn't happened yet, there is some value in considering the possibility that you lean into faith as opposed to leaning into fear and find the life that you're pursuing more as a possibility than as something to be dreaded. That's going to do it for today's Sexton Show. Thanks for joining us. Remember to go to sextonshow.com. Send us your viewer mail, your hate mail, your love mail, whatever you got for us. Segment ideas, we're always happy to see it. Remember to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. We are danger close to 100,000 subscribers. And when we get there, we've got lots of goodies for the audience. So please help us get there. Remember also to check us out on Instagram at NYC Divorce Lawyer. And also do your best to support our sponsors. That's the best way that you can help the show and the channel grow. And we really do appreciate every single one of you. For now, we're adjourned.